The 7,157th meeting of the Security Council is called to order. The provisional agenda for this meeting is, quote, letter dated 28th February 2014 from the Permanent Representative of Ukraine to the United Nations, addressed to the President of the Security Council, /S/2014/136, end quote. The agenda is adopted. In accordance with Rule 37 of the Council's Provisional Rules of Procedure, I invite the representative of Ukraine to participate in this meeting. It is so decided. In accordance with Rule 39 of the Council's Provisional Rules of Procedure, I invite Mr. Ivan Simonovich, Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights, to participate in this meeting. It is so decided. The Security Council will now begin its consideration of item 2 of the agenda. I now give the floor to Mr. Ivan Simonovich.
Madam President, distinguished members of the Security Council, you were briefed over this past weekend on the latest political developments in Ukraine. My briefing today, as you requested, will address the situation of human rights in Ukraine and update you on developments since my last briefing on 19th March. I will highlight key human rights issues, taking into account the most recent events in the East. My remarks are based on the findings of my two recent missions to Ukraine, as well as on the first few weeks of activities of the UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine. At the outset, I wish to emphasize the strong interlinkages between chronic human rights violations in Ukraine, the Maidan protests, and the current situation in the East. Almost a third of the population in Ukraine reportedly lives under the poverty line. Huge disparities in standards of living and inadequate access to basic social services attributed to corruption and mismanagement were amongst the underlying factors that led to the Maidan protests. Protests that started in Kyiv and swept across the rest of the country from November 2013 to February 2014 revealed a deep-rooted sense of dissatisfaction of the people of Ukraine. Violence by the security forces against pro-European peaceful protesters in Kyiv on 30th November 2013 created outrage and led to radicalization of the protests and clashes between protesters and police. Legislation that curtailed freedoms of expression and assembly and enhanced a sense of impunity by the police was rushed through the Rada in mid-January and led to violent actions by some radical protesters as well. Progress is still to be made in bringing to justice the perpetrators of serious human rights violations committed during the period of Maidan protests. During the protests, there were 121 persons killed, and still over 100 persons remain unaccounted for. The General Prosecutor's Office has initiated criminal proceedings, and it is important to ensure accountability of the perpetrators. During the Maidan protests, there were some expressions of national, racial, or religious hatred by some groups and individuals. Some attacks against the ethnic Russian community, in particular ethnic Russians that were affiliated to the former government, were also reported. However, these were neither systematic nor widespread. They were isolated incidents, which were then exaggerated through some biased media reporting, fueling fear and insecurity amongst the ethnic Russian community. There have also been some cases of incitement to hatred coming from the right-wing extremist groups, such as the so-called right sector. Fear and insecurity breed when incitement to hatred, discrimination or violence is not curtailed. It is therefore crucial that this issue be addressed as a matter of priority, and I welcome steps already undertaken by the government and the Prosecutor General Office of Ukraine to publicly condemn and investigate any such instances. In this context, it is clearly unacceptable that one presidential candidate calls his followers to arm themselves to defend the east of the country, while another is beaten because of his political views. Monitors are verifying these serious allegations. Madam President, my visit from 21st to 22nd of March was the most recent visit to Crimea by a senior UN official. During my mission, I interacted with a wide range of interlocutors, including local authorities, civil society, and especially victims themselves. This allowed me to obtain a first-hand impression of the situation. The media manipulation significantly contributed to a climate of fear and insecurity in the period preceding the referendum. The presence of paramilitary and so-called self-defense groups, as well as soldiers in uniform without insignia, was not conducive to an environment in which voters could freely exercise their right to hold opinions and the right to freedom of expression during the referendum on 16th March. There were credible allegations of harassment, arbitrary arrests, and torture by these groups that targeted activists and journalists who did not support the referendum. While reiterating General Assembly Resolution 68/262 on territorial integrity of Ukraine, I stress the obligations of the authorities in Crimea to respect international human rights norms. It is also of concern that on 11th April, authorities in Crimea have rushed the adoption of a new constitution. The Crimean Tatar Mejlis has raised important human rights concerns about the total lack of public debate, as well as the exclusion of Crimean Tatars from the drafting process of the new constitution. Concerns also continue to be raised with regard to citizenship issues, in particular that those who do not accept Russian citizenship will reportedly face many obstacles in guaranteeing their property and land rights, access to education and health care, and the enjoyment of other civil and political rights. Madam President, when I visited eastern Ukraine in March, the situation was already very tense. Meanwhile, the situation has significantly deteriorated. Reportedly, armed pro-Russian activists established the People's Republic of Donetsk, taking control of a number of government buildings in several cities of the Donetsk region, using violence, including against law enforcement officials. In Luhansk, pro-Russian protesters continue to occupy the local building of the security services, and in Kharkiv, participants of a pro-Ukrainian rally were attacked and beaten by pro-Russian demonstrators who broke through police cordon, resulting in some 50 persons being injured. Ongoing incidents and clashes between various groups of protesters, as well as with security forces, are of a serious concern. While reports indicate that the number of protesters, including some allegedly from outside of the region, has not significantly increased, and we are speaking of a couple of thousand, the level of violence and the proportion of armed protesters has. This has significant human rights implications. While protest-related human rights violations need to be urgently investigated and verified, security forces must play their role in maintaining public order in accordance with human rights standards. there are clear lines between what can be considered the exercise of the right to peaceful assembly and the violent behavior of armed protesters. However, in all cases, security forces should not use force unnecessarily or excessively. The situation in the East, if not adequately addressed as a matter of priority, risks seriously destabilizing the country as a whole. Those who exercise influence over the situation should take immediate action to halt the violence. The arming of protesters and their transformation into quasi-paramilitary forces must be stopped. Anyone inciting violence and providing arms to protesters can be held accountable for the resulting tragic consequences. In order to de-escalate tensions across the country, all parties should be encouraged to start an inclusive, sustained, and meaningful national dialogue based on respect of legal obligations of Ukraine under international human rights treaties already ratified. Such a process should take into consideration the concerns of all those who live in Ukraine, including minorities, and address issues such as language rights and decentralization of the country. Finally, I cannot stress enough the important role that accurate human rights reporting can play in preventing violence and diffusing tensions. Yesterday, we have issued our first report on the human rights situation in Ukraine based on my two visits and the first month of the human rights monitoring. We intend to issue our second report on 15th of May. Anyone with relevant information on human rights violations should share it with us so that we can verify it, further investigate if necessary, and include it in our next report. Thank you, Madam President.
I thank Mr. Simonovic for his briefing. I now give the floor to members of the Security Council. I give the floor to the representative of Lithuania.
Thank you, Madam President. I wish to thank the Nigerian Presidency for organizing this public briefing. I would also like to convey my appreciation to Assistant Secretary General Ivan Simonovic for his briefing. The report presented on the 15th of April by the Office of the High Representative on Human Rights squarely refutes Russia's inflammatory narrative, which it uses to justify its illegal actions in Ukraine. While the report points out that Ukraine suffered from human rights violations, lack of accountability, corruption, and mismanagement of resources, as well as a lack of a system of checks and balances and lack of free elections, the blame is placed on the previous regime. The report indicates that underlying human rights violations were among the root causes of the popular protests that led to a change in government. Adoption of restrictive anti-protest laws and excessive use of force by Berkut Special Police and other security forces under Yanukovych transformed a peaceful demonstration and led to the violence and deaths that ensued. The report indicates, however, since the current government took power at the end of February, tensions decreased along with the allegations of human rights violations. In Crimea, the main concerns are linked to the Russian-sponsored developments leading to and situation after the so-called referendum, which has had a direct impact on the enjoyment of human rights by local inhabitants, especially the indigenous Tatar community, who chose to boycott the referendum, and their situation has just been described. Many people may be forced to leave their homes and face other consequences arising from Crimea's takeover. This is also confirmed by the OSCE Special Monitoring Mission. The report also highlights the highly questionable character of the referendum, which was held in an environment of intimidation by armed groups and a total lack of media freedom. As you will recall, the plebiscite was organized in a particularly hurried manner, in the absence of established election practices, election observation, without a public debate on the merits, and providing exclusively for a secessionist option. The report indicates, too, that in eastern Ukraine, grievances with regard to the failure of central government to represent their interests have a history long predating the current government. The report states that human rights violations of the ethnic minorities in eastern Ukraine, Crimea, and elsewhere in the country have been neither widespread nor systematic. This is clearly confirmed by the most recent statement by UN Special Rapporteur on Minority Issues, Rita Itzhak, who has concluded that the overwhelming majority of minorities and other described harmonious inter-ethnic and interfaith relations and conditions of non-discrimination in all spheres of life. The current human rights situation of minorities, she says, in Ukraine and its civil and political, economic, social and cultural conditions cannot justify any violent actions or excitement by any party, national or international. And that is exactly what we have been saying all along. Whatever the issues regarding the human rights, minority rights situation in Ukraine, in Crimea, or eastern Ukraine in particular, none of these issues can ever justify the invasion and annexation of Crimea or ongoing destabilization of eastern Ukraine, and could and should have been resolved by way of established and well-tried Pacific instruments with the assistance of regional organizations such as OSCE and the Council of Europe, as well as the United Nations. Furthermore, the report notes that there are positive changes underway or under reflection in Ukraine today, such as a willingness to break with the past injustices and elaborate a new vision of the country. These conclusions contained in the report are confirmed by the current government's efforts to strengthen the rule of law, combat corruption, ensure minority rights, and address the issue of decentralization. In fact, the acting President Turchinov recently proposed to hold a referendum on decentralization of the country together with the national elections to be held on the 25th of May. All of the above points to the fact that the crisis provoked in Ukraine is not about protection of one particular ethnic minority or language minority or alleged Ukraine's extremist radicalism. But we knew that, too, all along, as various previous conclusions by high international representatives, including the OSCE, have repeatedly repudiated such allegations. Among other things, it is about Ukraine's destabilization with a view to obstructing and preventing May 25 elections, which the interim government in Kiev announced the minute it was appointed, for fear that power may destabilization and prevention of the elections, for fear that power may slip out of the fingers of the likes of Yanukovych and his corrupt cronies. It is also about a land grab, a naked land grab, and Russia's greater political and military ambitions. In a disturbing déjà vu, once again in a clear violation of Ukraine's constitution and accepted norms of international behavior, heavily armed militants without any insignia occupy local government buildings, declaring independence, which is a sad caricature of self-determination in defiance of national and international law. Furthermore, the systematic and well-oiled propaganda war against Ukraine and its provisional leadership is an extremely dangerous game because, as we have seen time and again from various situations around the world, including recently in Central African Republic, it is much too easy to release the arms-wielding genie out of the bottle, a genie of incitement and hate, but infinitely more difficult to contain it afterwards. We therefore urge the Russian side to stop its disinformation, anti-Ukrainian, anti-European propaganda campaign before it is too late. International bodies, Europe and Ukraine, have repeatedly called for the path of restraint and dialogue. The doors to the path are still open, with Geneva waiting for the quadrilateral meeting on the 17th of April, and we once again call on the Russian Federation to pursue that path. Madam President, a lot remains to be done for the current and future governments of Ukraine, fighting corruption, and we welcome the fact that relevant legislation is now being put in place. Improving access to education, health and social services, providing real equality for all its citizens, addressing the deficiencies of the previous justice system, combating impunity, which was so typical of the country, are the main issues of concern where the international community, including the United Nations, the OSCE and the Council of Europe, again, can readily provide further assistance. Impartial reporting on human rights violations will help to prevent manipulation of information by whoever. We therefore support continuous reporting by the UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine to ensure regular and continuous flow of updates on the situation in the country. We have also to provide necessary mid- and long-term funding for the mission, going well beyond June. This mission must continue its work on the entire territory of Ukraine, including Crimea. Other human rights monitoring instruments are also necessary. We are looking forward to receiving the findings of UN Special Rapporteur on Minority Issues visit to Ukraine in a period between the 7th and 13th of April, requests by other thematic mandate holders under the Human Rights Council special procedures like the Special Rapporteur on IDPs, to visit Ukraine and report our welcome by our side. It is also crucial to ensure independent monitoring on the human rights situation in Crimea specifically. We call on the occupying authorities to allow a human rights monitoring mission in Ukraine to work in Crimea, including the opening of sub-office in Simferopol. UN officials should continue to visit Crimea and report on the situation of all ethnic minorities on immediate freedom and human rights. Madam President, the people of Russia and Ukraine have become victims of propaganda and disinformation that provoked and fanned unconstitutional actions by local militants with external assistance. The situation is very tense, but a reversal, of course, is still possible. It is time to heed the countless calls to de-escalate and for Moscow to stop interfering into Ukraine's internal affairs. The current government is set to address human rights violations, language policy, rights of ethnic minorities, decentralization of power, corruption, and strengthen accountability and the rule of law. It is in our common interest that this government and the future government of Ukraine should be allowed to carry out this work unobstructed. We must also support its efforts to ensure that a free and fair election on the 25th of May, with the participation of all Ukraine in all its rich diversity, can take place. I thank you, Madam President.
I thank the representative of Lithuania for her statement. I give the floor to the representative of Russian Federation.
Благодарю вас, госпожа председатель.
Thank you so much, Madam President. The recent events in southeast Ukraine are of great concern. On April 13, having convened an emergency meeting of the Security Council, the Russian delegation called quite insistently upon a number of members of the Council to use all tools available to them to prevent the use of force in the crisis in the eastern regions of Ukraine. In response, we heard a number of ambiguous statements, and some delegations expressed their understanding for the plans of the Ukrainian authorities to use force against their fellow countrymen. Well, the result is clear. Those were as a result of the forcible coup. Usurp power in Kyiv have chosen to ignore the legitimate demands of the inhabitants of the southeast and the unconstitutional use of armed force to pacify their own people, blasphemously referring to it as bandits and terrorists. Such callous steps are fraught with the risk of a real civil war in Ukraine. The first blood has already been shed. The citizens of the southeast repeatedly warn the authorities that they are ready to serve as human shields. In a number of regions, regular units of the Ukrainian army and internal forces openly objected to firing on their fellow citizens. There are cases where troops switched over to the side of the people. Is this perhaps why the self-appointed leaders in Kyiv are using fighters from the right sector and other illegal armed formations on whose heels they, in essence, came to power? For example, in Kramatorsk, individuals were deployed in black uniforms, individuals belonging neither to the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine nor to the internal forces. Whose command did these units heed? Of course, very few here can harbor any illusions regarding the independence of actions of Kyiv. This is why the question arises. Maybe Kyiv was advised to launch a scenario force by those countries whose high-level emissaries continue to whisper in the ears of the Ukrainian leaders. A recipe for extricating oneself from this large-scale crisis which has impacted Ukraine is both simple and complex at the same time. Ukrainians must launch a dialogue, ensuring that it is comprehensive and full-fledged in nature, all without any exception. Regions and political forces in the country must participate in it on an equal basis, with equal rights in resolving pressing issues. All of this must be reflected in a deeply reformed constitution, one which would be seen by the multi-ethnic Ukrainian society as a sound one designed for the long term, to serve as a long-term basis for a legal government. Without this, it will be very difficult for Ukraine to preserve its unity and to resolve pressing issues on extricating itself from this crisis. This topic will be the main one at the Geneva meeting, which thus far remains on the agenda. This must also be the main objective of the international community when it speaks to its concerns regarding the events in Ukraine. One must now start a real rather than a cosmetic constitutional reform. Madam President, today it is extremely important to receive confirmed information on the situation in Ukraine. If the international forces there want to be present in the country, they must objectively, in an unbiased way, assess the situation and its developments. Unfortunately, the report of the UNHCHR, which was published yesterday, speaks to quite the opposite. This document, unfortunately, is biased in nature. Those who drew up the report chose not to notice that the current authorities in Ukraine became so as a result of an armed coup rather than civilized democratic elections. The attacks of illegal armed formations on the forces of law and order and the radical seizing of administrative buildings in the report are qualified as peaceful protests. Quite surprisingly, the demonstrations of the citizens of Ukraine in the eastern reaches of the country, on the other hand, are deemed to be illegal actions. In the report, it is stated that the Ukraine government allegedly intends to leave behind the unfairness of the past and to elaborate a new vision for Ukraine's future. In this, unfortunately, a number of inconvenient facts are left aside, some which point to the fact that the activity of this government from the very start is based on an atmosphere of violence and which it itself has created. There's no attention paid to a very dangerous development, the growth of aggressive nationalism and neo-fascism. The term of neo-fascism is not used at all, in fact. The right sector and other ultra-radical groupings, chauvinism in the eastern Ukraine, merely states that the right or the participation of minorities in the political life of the country is not fully taken into account. Nothing is said regarding the calls for fanning the flames of national enmity and the destruction of the Russian-speaking population. The statements of the leader of the parliamentary party, Svoboda, on the liberation of Ukraine from the Moscow Jewish mafia. And if no one has heard this slang in the past, we're referring here to Russians and Jews. I would like to remind you that this individual, according to the Wiesenthal Center, is fifth in terms of the most blatant anti-Semites in Europe. And this party is currently in charge of the force ministries in Kiev. Those who call for the killing based on ethnicity are criminals. They must be immediately arrested and they must be brought to justice in accordance with international commitments of Ukraine, including in the field of human rights. And rather than to create the skeleton of a national guard and the current leading elite, despite the fact that in the report the Ukrainian society is quite fairly described as bilingual, the real situation of the Russian-speaking population in the country is not reflected rightly. So sometimes the Russian-speaking population are referred to as people who are not full-fledged citizens and so forth. The harassment by radicals and physical violence against the representatives of the former authorities and those who do not agree with the current regime continues. Recent examples. On the 7th of April, a number of participants of the meeting of justices were harassed during the night of April 15th. The headquarters of the Communist Party of Ukraine, the Party of Sum, was attacked. Unfortunately, the participants of the current Kiev regime were not referred to in the report. Instead of this, there are references to a number of anonymous witnesses who saw something somewhere or perhaps heard something. What also doesn't stand up to the facts are the assessment of the situation with freedom of speech and freedom of the media, as if there are no continued attempts by the Ukrainian authorities to prevent objective light being shed on the situation in the country, threats and intimidation of journalists, and refusing to issue visas to foreign journalists and representatives of the media. Concerns regarding the current situation were heard not only by eminent NGOs, including Reporters Sans Frontières and the Committee of the Protection of Journalists, but also the European Commission. What type of human rights and rule of law can one refer to if there are attacks which are carried out even on candidates for the presidency of Ukraine, Oleg Tsareva and Mikhail Dobkin? And the Rada has finally been turned into a type of kulak democracy. As far as the UNHCHR's reports and Mr. Sim acknowledged that unfounded inventions regarding the situation in Crimea is concerned, Crimea, which is, of course, a subject of the Russian Federation, well, in principle, they cannot serve as the subject for discussion during today's meeting devoted to the situation in Ukraine. And they're not worthy of such discussion. The impression is being created that the report is fabricated to reach predetermined conclusions. His political tone was set by Mr. Simonovich in his statements following his first visit to Ukraine in March. On the whole, we are forced to note that the report undermines trust in the work of the UNHCHR as an unbiased defender of human rights. We will continue to closely follow the work of the UNHCHR's mission, and we will look at how its future reports will reflect the violence in southeast of the country unleashed by the so-called authorities in Kyiv. We advise all those who, not just in words but in actions, champion human rights in this country to devote special attention to the actions of Kyiv's self-proclaimed authorities, which threaten to pacify the east and southeast of the country by force, which is fraught with mass violations of human rights, first and foremost aimed against the Russian and Russian-speaking population of these regions. I thank you, Madam President.
I thank the representative of the Russian Federation. I give the floor to the representative of Chad.
Merci.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to start by conveying my gratitude to Mr. Ivan Simonovich, Special Envoy of the Secretary General for Human Rights, for his briefing. Chad remains extremely concerned by the situation in Ukraine. Situation marked by violations of human rights and violent actions likely to lead to unpredictable consequences. Chad condemns all forms of violations of human rights and any violence, regardless of the perpetrators. We ask that an independent inquiry be carried out to determine responsibilities in violations of human rights which have been committed so far. However, it seems to us to be difficult to clarify the situation in the field of human rights violations without a minimum of stability and reducing the tension which currently prevails in Ukraine. This is why we urge all parties to exercise restraint and invite them again to give pride of place to a peaceful settlement of the crisis. We believe that a political solution is possible within the framework of direct and candid negotiations between the relevant parties, mindful of the basic principles enshrined in the United Nations Charter and the concerns of all components of Ukrainian society. To this end, we encourage all parties to give negotiations a chance and to back the mediation negotiation efforts which are underway. We cherish the hope that the meeting scheduled for April 17th in Geneva will enable us to make progress in our search for a solution to this crisis. I thank you.
I thank the representative of Chad for his statement. I give the floor to the representative of the United Kingdom.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to thank Mr. Simonovich for his briefing today. I would also like to thank him and the United Nations Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine for producing the OHCHR report published yesterday. The United Kingdom welcomes this report and its findings. To date, it is the most comprehensive an independent assessment of the human rights situation in Ukraine since the onset of this crisis. It is therefore an important contribution to our discussions on the situation in Ukraine. Attempts to discredit the report as biased or politically motivated, as my Russian colleague has just done, lack all credibility. Madam President, the OHCHR report is clear that human rights violations were a root cause of the popular protests, which began in November last year. The report found that since the change of government in late February, allegations of human rights violations have decreased. But we do not underestimate the magnitude of the task ahead. In this regard, it is encouraging that the OHCHR report finds, and I quote, clear indications of a willingness by the present government to ensure a break with the past injustices and to elaborate a new vision for Ukraine's future. The United Kingdom is fully committed to supporting Ukraine in this endeavour. Madam President, the OHCHR report comprehensively refutes assertions made by the Russian Federation in this chamber and elsewhere to justify its illegal intervention in Ukraine. And I will give just three examples. First, on the 1st of March, President Putin requested authority to use Russia's armed forces in Ukraine on the basis that there was, and I quote, a threat to the lives of citizens of the Russian Federation, our compatriots, and the personnel of the armed forces. This claim, oft repeated, underpinned Russia's justification for military intervention in Ukraine. But the OHCHR report concludes that, in fact, attacks against the ethnic Russian community in Ukraine were, quote, neither widespread nor systematic. It further assesses, and I quote, Russian speakers have not been subject to threats in Crimea. This finding supports those of other independent authorities, including the OSCE High Commissioner for National Minorities, who also found no evidence of violations or threats to the lives of Russian speakers. Second, Russia bases its justification for the illegal annexation of Crimea on the legitimacy of the 16 March referendum. On 18 March, in his address to the Russian Duma, President Putin said, and I quote, a referendum was held in Crimea on 16 March in full compliance with democratic procedures and international norms. In stark contrast to this bold assertion, the report concludes that, quote, the presence of paramilitary and so-called self-defense groups, as well as soldiers in uniform without insignia, widely believed to be from the Russian Federation, was not conducive to an environment in which the will of the voters could be exercised freely. The report also states, and I quote, the OHCHR delegation received many reports of vote rigging, including cases of non-Ukrainian citizens participating in the referendum, as well as individuals voting numerous times in different locations. Overall, the report expresses, and I quote, serious concern about violations of the civil and political rights of the inhabitants of Crimea. And it cites cases of abduction, unlawful arrest and detention, harassment and violence against peaceful demonstrators, arbitrary arrest and torture. It also expresses deep concern at the consequences of introducing Russian citizenship and estimates that 3,000 Crimean Tatars have been displaced. Lastly, the report contains damning evidence that Russia has used propaganda and misinformation to exacerbate tensions and to destabilize Ukraine. It says that the Russian state television and radio broadcasting company has been, and I quote, disguising information about Kiev events in an attempt to justify Crimea's return to the Russian Federation. Moreover, the report states that greatly exaggerated stories and misinformed reports were, quote, systematically used to create a climate of fear and insecurity, end quote, to support Russia's case for the annexation of Crimea. Madam President, turning to current events, the United Kingdom supports fully the right of freedom of assembly and freedom of expression. Those Ukrainians who wish to demonstrate against the government are entitled to do so, provided that they do so peacefully. But there is a line. Well-equipped paramilitary units armed with automatic weapons are not peaceful protesters. A legitimate sovereign state must insist on a monopoly of the use of force. We express particular concern, as Mr. Simonovich did in his briefing today, about the arming of protesters and their transformation into quasi-paramilitary forces. Yesterday, the Ukrainian government began an operation to restore law and order in Donetsk in eastern Ukraine. The Ukrainian Prime Minister stated that operations will proceed gradually, responsibly, and prudently. The Foreign Minister emphasized that the operations were initiated only after all other means to resolve the situation had been exhausted. And we have received assurances that the operation will comply fully with Ukrainian and international law, safeguard human rights, and uphold Ukraine's international obligations. The Ukrainian government has acted responsibly throughout this crisis, even in the face of immense provocation, not least the illegal annexation of its territory, and despite continuing interference from Russia. We therefore have confidence that Ukrainian security forces will continue to act proportionately and in the interests of all citizens of Ukraine. We have heard from the permanent representative of Russia today a new fantasy narrative about developments in eastern Ukraine. I have no doubt that future independent reports from the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights will prove this new narrative to be as false as the Russian narrative on Crimea has comprehensively been shown to be. We remind Russia that it cannot use the situation in Ukraine, for which it bears significant responsibility, as a pretext for further illegal military activity. Madam President, our appeal to Russia is simple. Stop interfering in the internal affairs of Ukraine. Move your troops away from Ukraine's borders. Rescind the authorization to use military force in Ukraine and enter into dialogue. The European Union wants to see Russia as a partner, as a friend, and as an ally. A stable, peaceful, and prosperous Ukraine is just as much in Russia's interests as it is in our own. So rather than pursuing a strategy of destabilization, we call on Russia to take its place at the negotiating table and explain its concerns. We hope that the quadripartite talks scheduled for 17 April will provide just such an opportunity. I thank you.
I thank the representative of the United Kingdom for his statement. I give the floor to the representative of the United States.
Thank you so much, Madam President. And thank you, Assistant Secretary General Shimonovich, for your briefing today and for your diligent work on this controversial issue. We meet today to discuss the work of the UN's Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine and the timely report of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. After weeks of Russian disinformation and propaganda, this gives us yet another opportunity to focus on facts. The independent and impartial reporting we have heard today is essential to prevent the kind of distortions that may lead to further instability in an already combustible situation, a situation that continues to grow more dangerous every day. Today's remarks by the Russian Federation, where the independent report provided by the UN was disparaged, indeed slandered, as biased and unfounded, is deeply worrying. If you don't like the message the Russian strategy appears to be, metaphorically, shoot the messenger. Even if these attacks are attacks on the entire international community, which asks the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights to provide independent reporting, we urge the UN to continue to provide independent reporting and not to be deterred by slander and intimidation being practiced by those who do not like facts that have proven inconvenient and truths that credibly refute Russia's false and self-justifying claims. Let us be clear, the actions the world witnessed in Crimea and the denials of Russian involvement in the lead-up to its illegal annexation and occupation are repeating themselves in eastern Ukraine. Again, a region has been transformed almost overnight from a state of relative calm to manufactured unrest. Over the last several days, heavily armed pro-Russian separatists have seized the city administration, police stations, and other government buildings in 11 cities in Donetsk Oblast. Every major city in the region has at least one building under occupation. It is clear that these actions were not a set of spontaneous events or homegrown, but rather a well-orchestrated professional campaign of incitement, separatism, and sabotage of the Ukrainian state. And there is substantial evidence of involvement from Russia, which is now diverting attention from its own actions, its own territorial expansion, its own fear-mongering, by trying to change the subject. Well, it won't work. The contrast between the actions of the Ukrainian government and those of the Russian troops could not be starker. Ukrainian security forces have responded more carefully and in more measured ways to provocations in the East than that would be difficult for any of us to accept in our own countries. The Ukrainian government has repeatedly sought to negotiate with the armed groups that have seized public buildings and established unauthorized roadblocks in eastern Ukraine in an effort to resolve the situation peacefully through dialogue. Ukrainian officials have offered amnesty. We appreciate the government's statements that any actions it undertakes will be gradual and responsible, and contrary to the conspiracy theories put forth by the Russian representative just now, we continue to call for restraint, privately and publicly. Obviously, the best way to de-escalate this situation is for the armed militants to leave the buildings that they have seized. While this report speaks to an earlier period in the crisis, it is important to note that even several weeks ago, the monitoring mission had already received allegations that some of the people stoking unrest in the region were not Ukrainian citizens, but in fact agitators coming from the Russian Federation. Obviously, it is a critical question whether Russia is continuing its policy of seeking to destabilize and ultimately annex land from its neighbor. For purposes of establishing the truth, it is essential that the UN Human Rights Monitoring Commission go forward with its work and that it have full access to every part of the country, including Crimea. The United States commends the Ukraine government for facilitating the mission's activities and also for supporting the OSCE's ongoing efforts to monitor every aspect of the scheduled May 25th elections. Now let us consider some of the truths set forward in the High Commissioner's report. From December of last year until February of 2014, the Berkut Special Police and other elements of the federal security apparatus used excessive force against anti-government protesters. This deadly violence did not end until former President Yanukovych abandoned his office and fled the country. Since late February, when the new government assumed office, evidence of human rights abuses has decreased dramatically, except in the Crimea, where Russian policies threaten the rights of Ukrainians, Crimean Tatars, and other minority groups. Let me emphasize that according to this new independent report, the only region of Ukraine that has suffered a rapid deterioration in human rights is the part over which the government in Kyiv has least control. In Crimea, where the role of Russian authorities is as profound as it is illegal, journalists and human rights defenders have faced harassment and torture, censorship is common, and the presence of paramilitary and soldiers, quote, widely believed to be from the Russian Federation, end quote, has sharply inhibited freedom of expression. The report raises valid concerns about the introduction of Russian citizenship in a region that does not belong to Russia. Discrimination against Ukrainian citizens inside their own country and a plethora of practical issues related to property ownership, pensions, wages, health care, labor rights, education, and access to justice. The new report also examines the allegation repeated over and over again by Russian officials that there have been systematic attacks against ethnic Russians in Crimea and eastern Ukraine, and that Jewish communities have also come under threat. The reality is that there have been a few isolated incidents against individual members belonging to minority groups, and we should and do condemn these incidents. But the report makes clear these incidents were neither widespread nor a reflection of government policy. On the contrary, the report presents vivid evidence that the Ukraine government has sought actively to safeguard the rights of all citizens within its jurisdiction. Madam President, it is revealing that while Russia has sought to deny the realities cited in the UN's new report, the leaders of Ukraine are making a good faith effort to implement its recommendations. Among other initiatives, they are moving ahead with constitutional reform, plans to decentralize power, preparations for the election, and initiatives to curb the corruption that flourished so blatantly under the former president. Overall, the new government has acted with tremendous restraint under extraordinarily difficult conditions. There will always be more to do, but the allegation that the government is primarily to blame for the present tensions is completely baseless. Before moving to my conclusion, I just wanted to draw on the even-handed recommendations in the UN Human Rights Report in order to show that the charges against the United Nations are inaccurate. Among the report's recommendations to the government of Ukraine are the following: ensure accountability for all human rights violations during the unrest, ensure inclusivity and equal participation in public affairs and political life, prevent media manipulation, combat intolerance and extremism, and implement measures to eradicate corruption. The recommendations to the authorities in Crimea include actively resolve cases of missing persons, take all measures needed to protect the rights of persons affected by the changing institutional and legal framework, including citizenship, disarm and disband paramilitary units, investigate hate speech and media manipulation. These are not the recommendations of a biased report. Madam President, the release of this human rights monitoring report should remind us all of our responsibilities. The government of Ukraine has a responsibility to continue its reform initiatives and to ensure inclusivity and respect for the human rights of all groups. The people of Ukraine have a duty to cooperate with their government and fellow citizens in seeking to resolve disputes through peaceful means. The Russian Federation has an obligation to fulfill its commitments under international law to respect the rights and the territorial sovereignty of Ukraine and to back its professed desire for stability with actions designed to achieve that goal instead of its opposite. The Russian Federation must move its troops back from the border region, withdraw its forces from Crimea, and cease all efforts to destabilize Ukraine. The international community has a responsibility to support the people of Ukraine in their desire to build a strong and united country with a robust democracy and effective national and regional institutions. We have a collective responsibility as well to do all we can to prevent further bloodshed and to find a peaceful and just conclusion to what has been a tragic and unnecessary crisis. Tomorrow in Geneva, senior representatives from Ukraine, Russia, the EU, and the United States are scheduled to meet to discuss de-escalation, demobilization, support for elections, and constitutional reform. My government looks forward to participating in that meeting as an opportunity to resolve this crisis through diplomacy before it is too late. Thank you.
I thank the representative of the United States for her statement. I give the floor to the representative of China.
Madam President, I would like to thank Assistant Secretary General Simonovich for his briefing. China is deeply concerned about the recent escalation of the situation in Ukraine. We hope that all parties there can keep calm, exercise restraint, and prevent further deterioration of the situation. The priority now is to work within the framework of law and order, resolve differences through dialogue and negotiation, and fully accommodate the legitimate rights, interests, and aspirations of all regions and ethnic communities. This is the only approach that can bring lasting peace and stability to Ukraine, in keeping with the long-term and fundamental interests of the nation as a whole and all its communities. We are of the view that the Ukrainian issue is highly complex and that the only way out is to stay on the track of political settlement. A favorable external environment is indispensable in this regard. China has been calling on the international community to work constructively and provide good offices to de-escalate the situation in Ukraine. China has put forward a three-point proposal on seeking a political solution to the Ukrainian issue, and we have taken note of the ongoing discussion about the establishment of a multilateral mechanism for dialogue. We welcome these efforts, which are largely in line with the direction of the Chinese proposal. China supports the early launch of dialogues and consultations between relevant parties, and on the basis of fully considering and accommodating all legitimate interests and concerns, seek an ultimate solution that is acceptable to all. Thank you, Madam President.
I thank the representative of China for his statement. I give the floor to the representative of Australia.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you to Assistant Secretary General Simonovic for the OHCHR report and for his briefing. It's obviously very necessary that the Council give such careful focus on the human rights situation in Ukraine. We've heard repeated assertions about threats against particular groups, but we've seen little evidence to substantiate those assertions. These claims have, however, been used as a justification for continuing interference in Ukraine's affairs, including the threat and the use of force, contrary to the UN Charter. As a Council, clearly we need to be very clear-eyed and obviously responsible about the situation on the ground and the true nature of the challenges facing the Ukrainian people. The report of the UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission is what the Council needs to see at this critical point in such an unstable and dangerous environment. It seems to us to provide a balanced and neutral depiction of the human rights situation and a clear picture of events leading to the Maidan protests, the situation prior to the referendum held on 16 March in Crimea, and the current situation both in Crimea and in eastern Ukraine. Russia has made various assertions about the motivation of the Maidan protesters. The report makes clear that human rights violations were among the root causes of the demonstrations that took place throughout Ukraine, and in particular in Kiev. The protests were not driven by a so-called fascist agenda, but were a push for more representative and effective government. The heavy-handed response from security forces was a catalyst for their escalation. These actions by security forces came against a backdrop of a long-standing culture of impunity for human rights violations, including by the police, and we welcome reports that the new Ukrainian authorities have committed to investigating these violations and to holding perpetrators to account. The report also sheds lights on the events in Crimea. Russia has consistently argued that Russian-speaking minorities were threatened with repression. It has used this reasoning to justify its decision to take control of and annex Crimea. The report makes clear that there was no evidence of harassment or attacks on ethnic Russians in Crimea ahead of the referendum. Misinformed reports, however, of harassment of ethnic Russians by Ukrainian extremists served to create a climate of fear. The report notes that since the referendum of 16 March, measures have been taken in Crimea which are of deep concern from a human rights perspective. These include the introduction of Russian citizenship, making it difficult for those who choose to maintain their Ukrainian citizenship to stay in Crimea, and raising concerns about legal residency and the right to work. As we heard at the 31 March ARIA formula meeting for the Council, the situation for Tatars is particularly concerning. The report confirms this, noting that the number of displaced Crimean Tatars is estimated to have reached 3,000. The actions of paramilitary groups in Crimea remain outside the law and threatening. The report calls for their disbandment. It also emphasises that independent and impartial reporting on human rights in Crimea would deter violations, stimulate accountability, and prevent the spreading of rumours and political manipulation. The report looks carefully at the situation for Russian minorities across Ukraine and finds nothing to support the claims by Russia about threats to them. Russia's claims on this point simply do not hold. The report clearly notes, and I quote, that although there were some attacks against the ethnic Russian community, in particular those affiliated to the previous government, these were neither systematic nor widespread. As ASG Simonovic has just told us, and I quote again, these were isolated incidents which were then exaggerated, fueling fear and insecurity among the ethnic Russian community. The report does make good proposals, which we should all support, on the protection of minorities, including the recommendation to ensure minority groups are consulted in developing laws on language, and recommendations to ensure that the treatment of those associated with the previous government is in accordance with the rule of law and not motivated by revenge. We welcome the government of Ukraine's willingness to ensure a break with past injustices and to create a better future for the people of Ukraine. Elections are essential in this regard, and it is crucial that the people of Ukraine are able to decide on the future direction of their own country. We therefore fully support the upcoming elections on 25 May and call on all parties in Ukraine and the international community to support a free and fair ballot. Ukraine must be allowed to prepare for these elections without outside interference or any coercion in its domestic affairs. To conclude, Madam President, the international community has repeatedly urged Russia to actively reduce tensions, stop its destabilization in eastern Ukraine, and withdraw its forces from the provocative posture they've assumed on Ukraine's border. Ukraine's own response has been restrained and responsible. The talks scheduled to take place tomorrow in Geneva between Ukraine, Russia, the United States, and the EU are a crucial opportunity now for genuine dialogue. The latest combustible events in eastern Ukraine, where, as Ambassador Churkin has said, and I quote, "the first blood has been shed," make it essential that Russia engage seriously in this dialogue. Thank you.
I thank the representative of Australia for his statement. I give the floor to the representative of France.
Madam President, the report which we have before us is damning, for two reasons. Firstly, describes in the strictest possible terms the sorry outcome of years of corruption abuse by former President Yanukovych and his team, predatory and criminal in nature as it was. Is it any wonder that the Ukrainian population, wounded from years of incompetence and corruption, demonstrated there is no foreign involvement here? The report also describes how the regime responded to legitimate and peaceful demonstrations through the use of force. Madam President, the huge burden of restoring trust between Ukrainians, all Ukrainians, and their institutions lies with the new authorities. The report underscores that since the very first measures of the new administration, calm has returned to Kyiv. On the issue of languages or the status of regions, we encourage authorities in Kyiv to continue their efforts to bring people back to reason, to launch constructive and inclusive dialogue, and to reassure the population regarding their place within Ukraine. The acting president has rejected the repeal of the law on official languages. It's a symbolic decision which demonstrates the desire of the Ukrainian authorities to labor for the reconciliation of their country. Ukraine can preserve its diversity, which makes up both its wealth and its uniqueness. Madam President, for this, Ukraine requires our support. The first stage is capital, namely the conduct of, or the holding of a presidential election on May 25th. We must back the Ukrainian authorities to ensure that elections are held in the best possible conditions and represent all. We must move towards free and transparent presidential elections guaranteed by the presence of international observers. It would be unacceptable for violent armed groups to threaten the conduct of this democratic exercise, so crucial for the future of the country. We will not accept that the results of this election, the harbinger of so much hope for the future of this country, be disputed as a result of fabricated events. Madam President, I now turn to my second point. The report draws a damning picture of the impact of Russia's action on the internal situation in Ukraine. The report describes what the chain of events was which led to the annexion of Crimea. Yet again, it underscores that there was no threat against the Russian-speaking population of Crimea, arguments so often brandished about by Russia to justify its intervention. Quite the opposite. The report underscores that the risk of violations of human rights now threatens the Ukrainian and Tatar population. It is essential that the United Nations should continue to follow the situation of human rights in Crimea, which is an integral part of Ukraine, as recalled by the General Assembly of the United Nations by an overwhelming majority. The report also underscores that the deteriorating conditions and violation of human rights, which preceded the holding of the referendum on April 16th in Crimea, were the result of deliberate action, the presence of soldiers without insignia, the seizure of public buildings, the intimidation of the civilian population, of journalists, of human rights activists, the presence of foreign voters, and the violent propaganda against Kyiv broadcast on Russian TV channels. All of these actions were coordinated and orchestrated. They served as a prelude for an action which was unprecedented during the 21st century, an annexation which was unprecedented in the 21st century. For such a scenario to be repeated in eastern Ukraine would simply be unacceptable. All of my colleagues present in this room here read the excellent article in New York Times this morning, which described how Russia created its own virtual reality, which bears no relation to the actual reality on the ground. And I believe that the statement by my Russian friend shows us just how true this article was. We have referred here to 600,000 refugees fleeing from Ukrainian terror. Refugees were simply vanished from one day to the next. We were told that there were no soldiers in Ukraine and in Crimea, but we saw lorries with Russian license plates in Crimea. And today, the same disinformation continues. We inform that there are peaceful demonstrations. And again, one sees that these are heavily armed militiamen. We are told that there's no Russian intervention. On the internet, you see soldiers without any insignia who carry around weapons which are only held by the Russian Federation. We are told that fascist terror reigns in Kiev. You all know that if you go and visit Kiev, calm reigns there. We are told that Jews are threatened in Ukraine, whereas even Jewish organizations themselves state that they do not feel threatened in Ukraine. I could state numerous such examples, but never was a statement so far from reality. And all of you, through internet, can see this quite clearly. Madam President, Ukraine is cornered. It has been put on notice right here on Sunday not to react. One cannot conceive that it would suffer without any reaction the aggression it experienced a first time but a month ago. Aggression which was condemned by the General Assembly in its resolution 68262, and again, that this should happen again in the east of the country. We welcome the restraint shown by Ukraine's security forces, seeking to respond in a proportionate way to the unprecedented destabilizing actions they are facing, which were organized abroad. Madam President, we urge Russia to commit to de-escalate the situation and to condemn, alongside the rest of this Council, the attempts at destabilization in eastern Ukraine. More still, we urge Russia to stop locking itself in a vicious spiral, which can only lead to tragedy. It must withdraw its troops from the border. It must stop its destabilizing activities. It must stop yelling civil war. No one here is taken in. First, with this scenario of the fire-setting firefighter, there isn't even any desire here to appear credible. The situation is extremely serious. A meeting will be held tomorrow in Geneva. It will bring together Russia, the United States, the European Union, and Ukraine. This meeting is crucial, and we urge all parties to remain calm and to exercise restraint. In case of failure, or if Russia sought to avoid this event, new sanctions would be inevitable. This is not the path which we would like to see. But we will stand firm. Fully legitimate authorities must take over in Kiev. Elections must be held on May 25th, and we won't let Russia either prevent them from taking place or attempt to discredit them. I thank you.
I thank the representative of France for his statement. I give the floor to the representative of the Republic of Korea.
Thank you, Madam President. I thank Assistant Secretary General Ivan Simonovich for his briefing. We take this opportunity to reiterate our full support for the UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine. We are confident that such independent and credible international monitoring mechanisms can contribute to de-escalation of tensions on the ground. We hope that UN Monitoring Mission, in close cooperation with the OSCE Special Monitoring Mission, will continue to play a constructive role in this process. The recent report of the UN Monitoring Mission raised a number of human rights concerns in Ukraine. There have been credible allegations of harassment, arbitrary arrest, and torture targeting journalists and activists. In Crimea, the referendum was marred by a significant rise in propaganda and incitement to hatred and violence. We are especially concerned that such distorted narratives and restriction of media freedom are also being exploited in eastern Ukraine to further exacerbate the tense and vulnerable situation. We are closely monitoring unfolding events in eastern Ukraine, and we are alarmed by the violent seizures of key public buildings by armed individuals. Such incidents point to a serious deterioration in the situation. We condemn any use of force in seeking a change in status. any further incitement to hostility and provocative actions aimed at destabilizing Ukraine must stop. With the important elections scheduled in May, we call upon the Ukrainian government to lead an inclusive political process that reflects the region's diversity and ensures the protection of all ethnic and linguistic minorities. This is essential for any sustainable solution to this crisis. Before concluding, we stress that a solution to this crisis can only be found by exploring all diplomatic efforts, especially bilateral dialogue between Russia and Ukraine. In this regard, we welcome the forthcoming Geneva meeting between Ukraine, Russia, the United States, and the EU, and encourage all concerned parties to continue such efforts to seek a peaceful political solution. We once again reaffirm our full support for Ukraine's sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity of its internationally recognized borders. Ukraine's future must be steered by solely the will and aspirations of Ukrainians themselves, without intervention or influence by outside forces. Thank you, Madam President.
I thank the representative of the Republic of Korea for her statement. I give the floor to the representative of Argentina.
Thank you very much, Madam President. Let me begin by extending my thanks to the ASG for Human Rights, Mr. Ivan Simonovic, for his report on the human rights situation in Ukraine. Madam President, what else can we say but repeat what has already been said? Argentina continues to see the growing situation of tension in Ukraine, in particular in the eastern portion of this country, and its potential spillover effect throughout the region with great concern. What else can we say but repeat that we are particularly and deeply concerned that there have been violent clashes, and this may bring us further away from possibly finding a solution to this crisis and further destabilize the situation in the country. For that reason, my country once again reaffirms the fact that we believe it is essential for us to hold to the purposes and principles of the UN Charter, in particular, non-intervention in the internal affairs of other states. Non-intervention, either militarily, politically, or economically. We understand that the action of any state or international organization must have due respect for the management by the government of Ukraine of its internal affairs and for its future. Madam President, as Mr. Simonovic reported to this council, there have been human rights violations in Ukraine prior to the protests last November. Serious human rights violations were also committed during the protests and after those protests. While the new authorities have taken over power in Kiev, the report notes that there has been a reduction in denunciation of human rights violations and human rights abuses, and yet there are still serious concerns among sectors of the population with regard to the situation for minorities, in particular concerns that have been raised as a result of certain attacks against some minorities. Undoubtedly, we need to have more information, and we must continue to follow these events very closely. In this context, the availability of information, impartial information on the human rights situation, will contribute not just to ensuring accountability for violations and abuses of human rights, but also it will help to prevent any type of manipulation of that information, because this will only worsen a climate of impunity, insecurity, and violence. At the same time, we believe that the exhaustive investigation into abuses that have taken place since the beginning of the protests in Maidan Square, regardless of the perpetrators, and the sentencing of these individuals will undoubtedly help to restore calm and create institutional normalization in Ukraine. Undoubtedly, measures need to be taken to build up confidence among the various ethnic communities and minorities in the country. And Ukrainians throughout Ukraine must recognize that and understand that their legitimate concerns will be addressed. We must not have any incitement to hatred. We're not saying anything new here as a delegation, Madam President. We are simply recognizing the difficult situation in Ukraine, and it cannot be resolved through any unilateral actions. We insist on the need to avoid any action which would make this situation even more complex and make it impossible to find a peaceful political solution to this crisis. All the parties must work together to calm the situation, to show maximum restraint, and work towards inclusive dialogue. Madam President, what can we do? What can those of us do who hope that on the 17th of April, who hope that those who are going to be meeting in Geneva will have constructive dialogue and that they will find a peaceful political solution to this crisis? What we can do, we as members of the international community, is a great deal, a great deal. On the 17th of April, this meeting will begin. It is greatly needed, and we hope that it will be in a different climate. And we, those of us who will not be there on the 17th at that meeting, we must make sure that we do not detract from that meeting. Human rights are not the property of anyone, but the right of everyone. And we must recall that the United Nations Charter doesn't just have isolated chapters, but an unshakable truth. With that constructive, positive attitude, with this desire to have a positive discussion so that Ukraine can find serenity and peace, that's what we hope for. Thank you, Madam.
I thank the representative of Argentina for her statement. I give the floor to the representative of Jordan.
Shukran.
Thank you, Madam President. At the outset, I would like to thank the Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights, Mr. Ivan Simonovic, for his briefing before the Council on the situation of human rights in Ukraine, as well as for the efforts deployed by himself as well as the UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine. Jordan would like also to emphasize its support for the work of the mission as well as the importance of cooperating with it by all parties carrying out the recommendations contained in the report of the UNHCR on Ukraine. Particularly in light of the delicate and sensitive stage experienced by that country. The report spells out the direct relationship between the widespread and considerable breaches of human rights, including the right to freedom, opinion, the spread of corruption perpetrated under the previous government, as well as the protestations and the situation of insecurity which have battered Ukraine since November of last year. Attacks on the protesters, particularly in the Maidan, and the use of excessive force against them have led to speedy political changes in Ukraine, They also led to the formation of presidential and transitional government. The tense situation in East Ukraine as a result of the rebel movement taking place right now must be dealt with responsibly and reasonably by all parties. As we mentioned previously, the Ukrainian government has the right and is duty-bound to end that rebellion and to preserve its territorial integrity and the unity of its land. The current situation makes it necessary to deploy all efforts to end rebellion peacefully as much as possible. International norms on human rights must be respected in the imposition of the rule of law in these regions. We emphasize our call to bring pressure to bear on the rebels to end rebellion and to enter into dialogue with the government in Kyiv on all the matters relating to the future of Ukraine. By the same token, we welcome the convening of the quadripartite meeting in Geneva tomorrow. We hope that that meeting will lead to proposing adequate solutions to end the crisis and to persuade stakeholders to be convinced of calming down the situation and the work to restore stability and security to Ukraine. The current situation in Ukraine requires adopting urgent measures and steps to build confidence among all parties. It is necessary to limit extremist national and political diatribe. We call upon the influential circles to use their influence to curb this question, which constitutes the raison d'etre of what is transpiring currently in Ukraine, especially in the eastern part. We also emphasize the need for continued dialogue between the government of Ukraine with the diverse communities, factions, linguistic groups, and political parties to agree to an appropriate political methodology that covers the interests of all parties and charts the future of Ukraine as a state of law and institutions and human rights. It is necessary for that dialogue to start forthwith. It is also necessary that states and influential parties would create an appropriate climate to bring about outputs that would lead to the success of the presidential elections in May 2014. The future of Ukraine is linked with the success of the political transition process. The political process must be based on human rights, the sovereignty of democracy and rule of law, and it should represent all factions and categories of society, regardless of their language, ethnicity, and religion. We wish to stress the need not to interfere in the internal affairs of Ukraine and not to threaten it with force, and to enable the people of Ukraine to determine its own future. The international community must help Ukraine in this stage of political transition to overcome the difficulties which stand in the way of its security and stability and preserve its sovereignty and territorial integrity. Thank you, Madam President.
I thank the representative of Jordan for his statement. I give the floor to the representative of Rwanda.
Madam President, thank you for convening this briefing on the human rights situations in Ukraine, and I thank Mr. Ivan Simonovich, Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights, for his statement and for his efforts in reporting and ensuring human rights in Ukraine. The report of the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights issued yesterday indicates worrying patterns of human rights violations, mainly born from the current crisis. The report also indicated a culture of effective impunity, including torture, extortion, arbitrary detention, and corruption. It is unfortunate that the situation has bloomed into a deadly crisis where over 120 people lost their lives due to gunshots and severe beating, while 100 remains missing. The situation in Ukraine again proved fault lines in our preventive measures. Nonetheless, it is our view that the international community still has the chance to prevent further deterioration of the situation in Ukraine. We once again welcome the establishment of UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine, which we support, and we believe that we could build on the work of this mission to support Ukraine in its efforts of building a state that Ukrainians deserve. Madam President, it is incumbent for the Ukrainian government, and indeed a priority for it, to build confidence between the authorities and the people and among the various communities with a view to reassuring all people throughout Ukraine that their concerns will be addressed, especially the Russian-speaking community. It is the time to ensure inclusivity and equal participation of all Ukrainians in public affairs, rather than adopting legislation regarding lustration policy, which would lead to isolation and more radicalism. In eastern Ukraine, the situation on the ground in the last few days has deteriorated, instigating a dire need for a viable political solution. We express concern at the seizure and illegal occupation of public buildings and infrastructures by armed protesters, stressing on the need for security forces to avoid any excessive use of force while restoring necessary public order. In the meantime, we are extremely concerned by the increased rhetoric and negative propaganda, which have exacerbated the situation and in some cases is a driver to decisions taken preventing possibility of the stakeholders to reconcile. We once again reiterate our call to all parties to de-escalate the crisis and engage in genuine dialogue in the respect of the independence, sovereignty, and the territorial integrity of Ukraine. In this regard, we look forward to the talks between Ukraine, the Russian Federation, the EU, and the US to be held tomorrow in Geneva, and we hope that the meeting will contribute to a sustainable political solution in Ukraine and the region. Let me conclude, Madam President, by saying that the people of Ukraine will judge us by our action or lack of action. Failing them is not an option, and it is time to support a truly Ukrainian-led solution with the support of the region and the larger international community. I thank you.
I thank the representative of Rwanda for his statement. I give the floor to the representative of Luxembourg.
Madam President, I would like to thank the United Nations ASG for Human Rights, Mr. Ivan Simonovic, for his briefing. Discussions in recent weeks in this Council have shown that not all members have the same assessment of the situation in Ukraine. We have often witnessed here a dialogue of the deaf, and on the ground, the information war is raging. With this backdrop, Luxembourg welcomes the publication yesterday of the first human rights report on Ukraine and Crimea by the United Nations Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. This report, which is based on eyewitness accounts, has given us an objective picture of the situation. I thank Mr. Simonovic for the up-to-date information which he has just provided us as a supplement to the report. The report and Mr. Simonovic's briefing paint a very dark picture of the situation in Crimea. The consequences of annexation to Russia for people living in Crimea are damaging. This is particularly true for minorities, such as the Crimean Tatars, who have had to leave the peninsula out of fear of violent crackdowns, or Ukrainians themselves, who are also the subject of flagrant discrimination if they refuse to take on Russian citizenship. The report confirms that the referendum organized on the 16th of March in Crimea, in violation of the constitutions both of Ukraine and Crimea, were held in conditions which removed all legitimacy. Crimea was occupied and cut off from the remainder of Ukraine. Journalists and members of civil society were intimidated. Freedom of the media was seriously undermined. Cases of torture, forced disappearance, and killings must be the subject of independent judicial investigation. Measures must be taken urgently to restore the rule of law and protect human rights and fundamental freedoms. I agree with colleagues who underscored the importance of giving access throughout the territory of Ukraine, including Crimea, to the representatives of the United Nations. This is particularly true for the members of the United Nations Human Rights Monitoring Mission. Madam President, with the report of the High Commissioner, today we now have confirmation of what Mr. Simonovic told the Council on the 19th of March. There has not been in Ukraine any systematic or widespread attack against, and I quote, the ethnic Russian community, end quote. And yet the unfounded rumors or threats of such attacks continue to be used in order to stir up trouble in the eastern and southeastern regions of Ukraine. The Russian media are being used systematically to create a climate of fear and to stir up local populations against the Ukrainian government. Luxembourg, therefore, endorses the appeal made yesterday by the OSCE representative on freedom of the media, Ms. Dunja Mijatovic, regarding measures to stem propaganda and misinformation. The present situation is explosive. It would be irresponsible to further fan the flames. Luxembourg condemns actions which have been carried out since the 6th of April by armed groups of individuals in a number of cities in the east and southeast of Ukraine, in particular in the Donetsk region. These actions are not at all spontaneous. They are coordinated and well orchestrated, a reminder of what has taken place in Crimea. We are particularly concerned by the targeted deployment of pro-Russian individuals in the local demonstrations mentioned in the High Commissioner's report. We are not challenging the right to demonstrate freely, but this deployment of pro-Russian elements has led to violent incidents and the seizure by force of government buildings and local public institutions. We call on Russia publicly to separate itself from these actions of the militia separatists. We pay tribute to the composure and to the restraint shown by the Ukrainian authorities in the face of these destabilizing actions. We understand that they cannot fail to react in this situation. We encourage the Ukrainian government to proceed with restraint and proportion, showing full respect for human rights. Madam President, Luxembourg continues to believe that it is still possible to find a peaceful solution to this crisis. This requires direct dialogue between Russia and Ukraine. We hope that the four-party talks, which will take place tomorrow in Geneva with senior diplomatic representatives from Ukraine, Russia, the United States, and the European Union, will lead to dialogue and a way out of this most dangerous crisis, the most dangerous crisis that Europe has faced since the end of the Cold War. While we await a political solution, the presence throughout the territory of Ukraine of impartial UN and OSCE observers is key in order to establish the facts and to counter any warmongering. We encourage the Human Rights Monitoring Mission to redouble its efforts in its tasks, as has already been said in Brussels today by the OSCE Secretary General. Being a neutral observer and reporting on the facts will lead to the conditions for de-escalation of this dangerous situation. Thank you.
I thank the representative of Luxembourg for her statement. I give the floor to the representative of Chile.
Madam President, we thank ASG Simonovic for his briefing on the human rights situation in Ukraine. Chile endorses the appeals made by Mr. Simonovic to guarantee accountability with regard to all human rights violations committed during demonstrations in Kiev between December 2013 and February 2014. We must adopt immediate measures in order to build trust between the interim government and the population, taking into account, in particular, ethnic minorities. Similarly, it is urgent to guarantee full respect for the rule of law, democracy, and human rights in Ukraine, including the rights of all minorities. We believe it is particularly disturbing to see the worsening of the human rights situation in the eastern region of Ukraine, in particular, violations of the right to freedom to expression, the freedom to meet. There have been attacks against activists, journalists, and members of the political opposition. We urge the parties to find a peaceful solution to this crisis through direct political dialogue and to act with moderation and to abstain from adopting any unilateral measures which may increase tensions and to take part in international mediation efforts in accordance with General Assembly Resolution 68/262. We hope that the meeting to be held tomorrow in Geneva, in which Ukraine, the Russian Federation, the European Union, and the United States will take part, will help us find a way out of this crisis. We will conclude by expressing thanks for the good offices that are being carried out by the Secretary General and underscoring the work of the Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine and the efforts of the OSCE in order to contribute to establishing the facts, reducing tensions, and creating an environment which will be propitious for the holding of elections on the 25th of May. Thank you.
I thank the representative of Chile for his statement. I shall now make a few remarks in my national capacity. I also want to thank Assistant Secretary General Ivan Simonovich for his briefing on the human rights situation in Ukraine. We have studied the OHCHR report on the human rights situation in Ukraine and note that it is comprehensive. We are encouraged by the relentless and consistent engagement of the UN in Ukraine. This is exemplified by the establishment of the UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine, the readiness of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights to provide testimonial assistance for legislative reforms, and the recent high-level visits by the Secretary General, USG Feltman, Senior Advisor Robert Seri, and your good self. Indeed, we believe in the central role of the United Nations in de-escalating tensions in Ukraine. The UN provides an impartial platform as well as the professional expertise, both essential ingredients in the efforts to ensure that human rights are respected and protected in Ukraine. Independent monitoring and analysis of the human rights situation will outline technical, legal, or other assistance needs and may indeed contribute to addressing the root causes of the violence. The human rights issues linked to the current crisis in Ukraine need to be comprehensively addressed within the framework of a peaceful and negotiated resolution of the crisis. The authorities must continue to engage all groups in the country and assure them that their concerns will be addressed. The ongoing rebellion in eastern Ukraine flagrantly adds salt to injury and exacerbates an already tenuous political situation with far-reaching implications for human rights, peace, and security. We all know that it's an established fact that violations of human rights often occur in situations of conflict. This underscores the imperative for a speedy political diplomatic resolution of the crisis in Ukraine. We urge all concerned parties to cease beating the drums of war. They must work assiduously towards de-escalating tensions and embrace dialogue in all its ramifications in the larger interests of the people of Ukraine. All around this table, we have all expressed hopes that the meeting taking place tomorrow, the 17th of April, will lead to a resolution of the crisis. I hope that our hopes are not misplaced. I hope that our hopes will be justified. I resume my function as President of the Council, and I now give the floor to the representative of Ukraine.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, Excellencies, Assistant Secretary General, thank you for convening this meeting of the Security Council to discuss the report of the human rights situation in Ukraine. I'm grateful to Assistant Secretary General Ivan Simonovich for presentation of this report today. Today's meeting is held while on everybody's mind is the following fact. It is only because of the Russian military aggression, unimaginable in the 21st century, yet unfolding in our plan sight, that the situation in Ukraine has emerged on the Council agenda. Ukraine has welcomed the publication of the report, which objectively enough reflects the situation in my country in the field of human rights. Unlike the previous administration, the new government in Ukraine is willing and ready to embrace recommendations aimed at promoting human rights and rule of law in our country. At the same time, we hope that the other government mentioned in the report will also take specific actions in order to stop and prevent human rights violations. The document strongly rejects the allegations of violations of the Russian minority rights in Ukraine, which served as a reason for Russia's military aggression against our country and annexation of Crimea that was declared illegal by the General Assembly. My Russian colleague stated today that Russian language is in danger in Ukraine. Let me give you some comparative figures on situation around protection of language rights of several million Ukrainians in Russian Federation and Russians in Ukraine. Figures are based on the report of OEC High Commission on National Minorities dated March-April 2009. Please compare figures. Secondary schools. There are no Ukrainian secondary schools in the Russian Federation for at least 2 million people. In Ukraine, there are 1,256 Russian secondary schools. Publications. 7 Ukrainian papers are published at the expense of the local authorities and Ukrainian organizations of the Russian Federation. Financial support at the federal level is not provided to ensure the information needs of the Ukrainian community in Russian Federation. 1,176 newspapers are published in the Russian language in Ukraine. Broadcasting. There is only one Ukrainian broadcast radio program in Russia. Russian language TV and radio programs in Ukraine take around 74% of the total broadcasting in Ukraine. Russian colleague today and permanently stated about the growing anti-Semitism, neo-Nazism in Ukraine. And his Russian side is concerned about the absence of these notions in the report on human rights today. Let me quote some excerpts from the collective letter of Association of 266 Jewish Organization of Ukraine. This letter addressed to the President of Russia, Vladimir Putin, not long ago. I quote, "The speculation about the violent Ukrainization and the prohibition to speak in Russian, which was always stressed in the Russian media, should remain on these authors' conscience. Mr. President, confidence expressed on the growth of anti-Semitism in Ukraine does not meet the real facts. Perhaps you were confused indicating Ukraine instead of Russia, where Jewish organizations have documented the growth of anti-Semitism last year. We were, and still we are, being frightened by the fact that Banderas and fascists are rushing to power in Ukraine, and we should expect the Jewish pogroms. Yes, we are aware that political opposition and the social protest powers that achieved positive changes in the executive branch of the country are made up of different groups. The nationalists are among them, but even the most marginal of them do not allow themselves to express the anti-Semitism and the other forms of xenophobia. And what we know that our nationalists are under control of the civil society and new government of Ukraine, which is not the case with the Russian neo-Nazis who are encouraged by your secret services. End of quote. Today, our Russian colleague also touched upon the this case around Mr. Tsarev and Mr. Dobkin as the candidates to the presidential elections. I'm authorized to say that we condemn all forms of violence, especially when it concerns the opposition leaders and candidates for president. In this context, the word must be said by the police, who are obliged to carry out a proper investigation and submit it to the court. Today, the Ukrainian parliament considered these cases, and we expect that it will be well assessed, and the prosecutor office will make the comments of that. But what is also interesting in that situation, I would like to note that in the current situation, coupled with the aggressive actions against Ukraine, cannot be excluded and provocations from our opponents. Note that Mr. Tsarev was attacked by unknown assailants and rescued. Those who rescued him were from the right sector, precisely the right forces that constantly being accused by Russia in extreme intolerance to Russia. Mr. Tsarev openly thanked representatives of this power for the salvation. This story was broadly broadcasted in the main news channels in Ukraine. We have this full version on the disk, and we will give it to the Russian colleagues because the Russian TV channels demonstrate only part of that interview. We call on the United Nations member states to take a close note of the human rights violations detailed in the report before and during the Crimea pseudo-referendum of March 16, including harassment, arbitrary arrest, torture, violations of freedom of expression, media freedom, access to information, and the protection of journalists. Particular attention is rightly given to the violations of the rights of the inhabitants of the peninsula under the Russian occupation. The most vulnerable communities in IRC are considered to be the Crimean Tatars and Ukrainians, who were intimidated and forced to leave their homes because of lack of safe environment and oppression of their rights and freedoms. Tatars' leaders consider this situation as the third act of genocide against their ethnic group for the last century. Given the ongoing systematic violations of the human rights on the Crimean Peninsula, the Ukrainian side insists that the situation in the Autonomous Republic should remain under the radar of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights and its mission and other international monitoring mechanisms. In this respect, we welcome the intention of the UN Monitoring Mission to establish its sub-office in Simferopol. Mindful of the provisions of the General Assembly Resolution, Territorial Integrity of Ukraine. Alarming is the fact that along with the analysis of recent developments and factors in the eastern regions of Ukraine, the document reports on the external interference in the situation, in particular the participation in the protests and clashes of individuals who arrived from Russia. At Security Council meeting last Sunday, we gave some facts of such interference. You can find much more evidence by visiting official site of Ukrainian Secret Service, SBU. Ukraine is surprised that the only criticism of peace enforcement operation in Ukraine comes from the Russian Federation. You will recall this, that this country is one of the most frequent users of the counter-terrorist terrorism tools against its citizens. I would like to draw your attention that in all counter-terrorism operations, Russia uses the same scheme. If the enemy does not surrender, it is stormed at any cost. Dozens of the examples could be given. Peace enforcement operation in Ukraine is undertaken to protect people, restore law and order in some regions of Ukraine. The operation is targeted exclusively at armed groups committing acts of criminal nature, including seizures of administrative buildings, police and military facilities, and airports. Those armed groups are strongly supported by the Russian Special Operations Force units, illegally infiltrated into the territory of Ukraine. My Russian colleague mentioned today that the first blood appeared in the eastern Ukraine. It is the blood of five Ukrainian peace enforcement officers killed in a well-prepared attack governed by the Russian officer, Igor Strelkov. You can find this detailed information on the mentioned site of Ukrainian Secret Service, www.sbu.government.com. It is in this light that we look forward to the mission's next report, which will be focused on eastern Ukraine. Madam President, the United Nations experts stated clearly that a number of human rights violations in other parts of Ukraine were a heritage of the previous government, which became one of the main reasons that caused the Ukrainian mass protests in November 2013 through February 2014. Those reasons, challenging human rights in Ukraine generally and in its eastern and southern regions particularly, for decades are well known. Poverty, high level of child mortality, unemployment, dangerous working conditions, especially in coal mining industry. As a result, basic human rights principles provisioned by the Constitution of Ukraine were not always respected in my country. The only solution for Ukraine to cope with those problems is to change dramatically the inherited status quo in favor of building of an open democratic civil society. The newly formed parliamentary coalition and the government of Ukraine have repeatedly stated their commitment to reforms aimed at eliminating those vestiges of the past, and we are grateful to the authors of the report that they have noted positive trends in the activities of the newly formed Ukrainian authorities, which indicate willingness to ensure a break with past injustices and to elaborate a new vision of Ukrainian future. The government's action plan presented by the new cabinet is inclusive as to the problems of each and every region of Ukraine. It is focused on practical needs of the population, including ethnic minorities. What we need to achieve these goals is that Russia leaves us in peace. Madam President, we highly appreciate the role the United Nations is playing to normalize situation in Ukraine and are ready to enhance the cooperation with the human rights bodies of the United Nations for the proper consideration of human rights issues in the implementation of the wide-ranging reforms. These reforms are aimed at ensuring the rule of law, development of democratic, pluralistic society, elimination of corruption, compliance with social standards, and protection of rights of minorities. The real watershed in this process will be presidential elections in Ukraine on May 25th. We are determined to have them under all circumstances and to make these elections the most transparent in the history of independent Ukraine. I thank you all for your support and understanding. Thank you, Madam President.
I thank the representative of Ukraine for his statement. The representative of the Russian Federation has asked for the floor to make a further statement. I give him the floor.
Thank you so much, Madam President. Well, firstly, I cannot but touch on a few of the claims which were heard here just now in the statement of my Ukrainian colleague. Analyzing the whole of his statement is simply impossible because it's not quite clear what he said in himself, in his own personal capacity, and what he read, something which was written previously. But of course, he bears responsibility for everything that was said, as these things were said on microphone. In principle, we're not going to discuss the situation in Crimea at the Security Council, at the very least not under the title of Situation in Ukraine. But one of his statements is nothing less than a provocation. Nothing less than that. And I cannot but respond, namely that the Tatar population of Crimea considers that the third act of genocide is being prepared against it. This is a simple lies, lies, and provocation. Because the constitution of Crimea clearly enshrines the Tatar Crimean language as the third official state language, something that never existed in the past. On an equal basis with Russian and Ukrainian, the representatives of the Tatar population have high-level positions reserved for them in Crimea, something which wasn't the case before. Now the Tatar population of Crimea will be able to enjoy the fact that its social, economic, and other issues will be resolved not only by the leadership of the Russian Federation, which devotes the necessary attention to this, but will also do this with the assistance of Tatarstan, one of the largest, most powerful subjects of the Russian Federation, most prosperous subjects, on an agreement between the Tatar of Crimea and Tatarstan that they would work together has already been concluded. So, as far as the Tatar Crimean population is concerned, ladies and gentlemen, please do not concern yourself. And over the 2.5 years, I'm referring the 2.5 decades since the independence of Ukraine, the Tatar Crimean population had to deal with this situation, to speak of the Russian or Ukrainian, but this situation will now come to an end. Of course, a certain amount of time will be necessary for this, and now a topic which is simply unacceptable for the Security Council, but the Ukrainian colleague quite wrongly repeated what I said regarding the Russian language in Ukraine. I said that the Russian language is being forced out of common utilization, and this is the truth. The new leadership, your new leadership, Yuri Anatolyevich, the first step that it undertook was to turn off the Russian language versions of its websites. I have a great many figures. You had tons of figures. I have one figure. According to the data which I possess, in Kyiv, from the 195 Russian schools which you had in the 90s, 5 remain. And from all Ukrainian universities, to enter these, you have to pass an interview in Ukrainian. And even though Ukrainian is close to Russian, it is a language which is to be separately studied. And so for the Russian population, it's very difficult to enter university if, of course, there's an interview in Ukrainian. This is a separate topic. It will have to be discussed at length. Of course, the rights of Ukrainians in Russia. The Ukrainians don't live in a compact place. This is quite different from the situation of Russian language population in Ukraine. And now I'd like to move on and share a few words regarding the statements of other colleagues at the Security Council. Now, our discussion, to a large extent, starts to remind us of a record which keeps on jumping back and back and back and repeating the same thing. But a few things were surprising. A broken record is what I refer to. But a few things did surprise us. For example, our British colleague referred to the fact that Russia has to clarify its concerns. We have repeatedly, on numerous occasions, made official statements at the highest possible levels, at the level of the foreign minister, where we expressed our concerns, clarified them, and our delegation here at the United Nations repeatedly spoke in great detail, spelling out our vision, how we, together with Ukrainians, with those members of the international community who are ready to do so, propose to work to help Ukraine extricate itself from this crisis. But a few are still sitting there and waiting for us to clarify our concerns. Maybe you're simply not listening, or perhaps you don't want to listen. This is quite a different issue. Another aspect of this, of course, it is good to hear and understand our concerns. But the main thing here is to understand the concerns of the people of Ukraine. In this case, to understand the concerns of the population of the southeast and eastern reaches of Ukraine. What was done by this new leadership in Kyiv to listen to these concerns? Mr. Yatsenyuk visited Donbass. He didn't meet any of the protesters. He met his friends, the oligarchs, the individuals who he or Kyiv appointed to various positions. And he told them a number of things, things which were then denied by his colleague, Mr. Tuchinov, who on the next day stated that military force needed to be used against the southeastern region. And now to my dear friend, the representative of the United States, you said something which was quite true, that it is not good when the opposition takes up arms, when the opposition seizes administrative buildings. But what is unfortunate is that this understanding has come a little bit too late to the President of the United States. Why didn't you state this back in January, when in Kyiv we had this lawlessness, which was significantly more intense than what is being witnessed right now in the cities of eastern Ukraine? Why didn't you say the same thing back then, either here at the United Nations or in Washington or in your many contacts with the authorities in Kyiv? Had this been done, maybe the crisis would not have unfolded this way. It's, of course, it's not good when civilian population takes up arms. But in Kyiv, when the issue arose of the disarmament of the illegal formations, there was a figure that stated that in Ukraine there are 3 million illegal firearms. But people who are worried about their well-being and attempting to protect themselves, how can they not take up weapons? I think it's one can understand them. Of course, in normal conditions, this is quite questionable. Now, my French colleague, yes, he used an interesting term, virtual reality. This is a term which was in my head while I was listening to some of the statements of my colleagues. Individuals took power in Kyiv through the force of arms. Some of them have the type of reputation which means that a year ago you wouldn't have shaken their hands. The EU stated that there can be no coalitions with them. And they are promising you something of a type. But they're not making realities of any of their promises. For example, they promised that they were going to disarm someone in Kyiv. Nothing happened. Investigation of those acts of lawlessness which took place in February in Kyiv and before then, has anything taken place? Objectively speaking, there's a general prosecutor, a prosecutor general, who is a representative of a well-known party, and he simply said the previous authorities are responsible for everything and they are promising you things, some of them. And you are simply accepting this as the truth. Are you really that naive? It's interesting, it's not the first time that we're witnessing this here over these last few years. For some reason, some of our Western colleagues believe that if there is some armed coup, then it's better for it to be armed. Well, then, of course, it will always result in Democrats taking power. Thomas Jefferson will take the lead in all of this. But where do you see these individuals? Well, I mean, the people in authority now, do any of them have a serious reputation as politicians who are Democrats? You won't find any such individuals there. And now this pseudo-Democrats. Have they done anything to forge something that would have just the appearance of democracy? In the Supreme Rada, nothing but fights. They forcibly are ejecting those who object to them. On the Maidan, you have military camps. No one has been disarmed from the right sector. And these Democrats, having established no democracy in Kyiv, are now trying to enforce democracy, or law and order, some of our colleagues have said, through the deployment of armed forces. And they're trying to enforce this in southeastern Ukraine. This is virtual reality. And a number of colleagues approvingly referred to the elections of May 25th. They're being prepared. We don't know how all this will pan out. But what is our concern here? And what I do have to agree with my Ukrainian colleague with, as I don't remember what his exact words were, but there has to be an in-depth change as compared to the past. There has to be a break with the past. The Ukrainian people are now being asked to buy a pig in the poke. Go and elect our president on May 25th, but it is entirely unclear what sort of authority he will possess. What sort of government will he preside? Significant authority, or perhaps will the Prime Minister have more authority and more power? But
The elections will take place on May 25th. First, constitutional reform and then presidential elections. That would have been logical. No, this has been all reversed, and now these elections are being pushed forward, where members of parliament are going to be elected. Is this democracy? Is this breaking with the past and building a new democratic Ukraine? And now, very last but not least, the negotiations in Geneva, of course, we cherish our hope that they take place. We're preparing very carefully for them. If they are not undermined by some sort of action in southeastern Ukraine, they will take place. But are our Western partners in Ukraine ready? Are they going to be ready for this? This is a big question to us, and this is perhaps a small secret to you. We sought various formats for involving representatives of the region. As the authorities themselves are incapable of forging dialogue, perhaps through this format we could do so. Of course, the response was negative, the response to this proposal of ours. Let us see what all of this ends with. I'm referring here to the Geneva meeting. Of course, we hope that it leads to a Ukraine which will engage on the path of normal development, where all the regions would understand clearly what their fate is tomorrow, what is awaiting them tomorrow. All the religious, all the ethnic groups would understand clearly what the future has in store for them. And then we would together look at the economic problems of Ukraine. And this is a dialogue which we invite our partners to participate in, including in the well-known letter by President Putin sent to a number of heads of European states. Madam President, I thank you.
I thank the representative of the Russian Federation for his statement. The representative of Ukraine has asked for the floor to make a further statement. I give him the floor.
Thank you, Madam President. I will make this last statement in Russian language.
Well, the thought comes to my mind that sometimes there is no point in making comments on certain things, because our Russian colleagues, in any case, will stand by their position and their opinion, and they will represent the situation the way they wish it to be seen. So, this virtual reality which our Russian colleagues are demonstrating, when everyone says one thing, but they live in their own separate world, bubble of a world. Vitaly Ivanovich, whether you want this or you don't, you will have to participate in a discussion on the issue of Crimea, because this is Ukrainian territory. It's temporarily occupied. But until it is returned to us, we will continue to discuss it. And we have seen the support demonstrated by the whole world to Ukraine. It's unfortunate that when you're making your comments, you're using words such as lies and so forth. It's a shame that your representatives and you yourself were not present at the Security Council meeting with the Crimean delegation, which was headed by a well-known human rights defender who sat in Soviet jails for 15 years defending the rights of his people, Mustafa Cemilov. And he said just what I said. Let us repeat his position. And you simply refer to his position as lies and provocations. Well, the Crimean Tatars will hear that you consider all of this to be lies and provocation. And I have no further comments, because everything that was said previous to this was nothing more than manipulation and a distortion in a style which is well known and familiar to all of us. Thank you for all of you for your attention.
Thank you, your for your patience. Thank you.
I thank the representative of Ukraine for his statement. There are no more names inscribed on the list of speakers. The Security Council has thus concluded the present stage of its consideration, the item on its agenda. The meeting is adjourned.